Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Republican lawmakers are weighing new strategies to get around Governor Tony Evers' veto authority after the state Supreme Court upheld his broad veto authority. Plus, where things stand on a tax package, we hear from GOP leaders. And new guidance issued to state workers regarding federal immigration officers is facing backlash. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for April 25th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We begin this week with the ongoing discussions of a tax cut proposal that GOP leaders and Governor Tony Evers have been negotiating. We're now at the stage, after they met last month privately behind closed doors, that their staff members are now continuing these discussions. Now, as we get into this topic, J.R., we do not know what the tax plan would look like, where really they're at on an actual bill. However, what we do want to note, as we did last week, that this meeting was significant. Right? You know, they don't meet often. We don't even remember the last time they've actually met behind closed doors to discuss things. However, when it comes to the details of this, GOP leaders have long said that their preference is to send Evers a tax cut bill relatively soon instead of crafting one in the state budget. However, when I asked Governor Tony Evers this week, he said he would not support a standalone bill. However, that doesn't mean negotiations are over. I also asked Assembly Speaker Robin Voss about what the governor had to say. Let's first take a listen to both of them regarding the path forward on a tax plan.
First of all, we're somewhat apart on what we want to do with taxes. But it has to be part of the budget. We just can't do things one way and then, you know, just do taxes and then do spending. We have to look at it together. That's the way it's done every time that I've been governor, and I think just about every time. So a separate bill is not something I would support.
The goal, again, is to try to find something that can actually get across the finish line. I think the governor realizes that we're not going to spend any more money unless we have the ability to reduce taxes and help folks deal with inflation. And I think we realize that we're not going to ever get a tax cut if we don't talk with the governor and see where his priorities are as well.
Now, all this discussion comes as Republicans are really trying to work around Governor Tony Evers' veto authority after, of course, it was last Friday that the state Supreme Court upheld his broad veto authority. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was on the radio this week saying they're thinking about even crafting the budget without numbers and digits and feeding it through AI. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities out there. He was also asked about possibly delaying the budget, just continuing funding per normal. He said that's a possibility, but downplayed the idea. Obviously, that's not the path that they would like to do. Of course, the goal is to have a budget by July 1, but there are, of course, many factors that go into us, specifically about this tax plan, because if it's not in the state budget, obviously, then the governor, if it's in the budget, he can craft it and possibly do another veto that would give him credit for a tax plan going forward.
So let's take this onion apart a little bit, piece by piece. So first, you have the combined effect of this Supreme Court ruling that emboldens Evers and his veto authority, and you have a Senate Republican caucus that has got 18 members and a couple who don't vote for much anything. So how do you get a budget done if you've got to worry about the governor's maybe pushing the envelope a bit more of the veto power and not sure your numbers? In theory, I stress in theory, you could see Republicans and the governor striking a deal of, okay, governor, we'll do this tax cut, do this in education, we'll address Medicaid ongoing expenses, nibble on the edges here and there, get something that we can get, I don't know, maybe 3, 4, 5 votes in the Senate from Democrats, pass that bad boy, and have a budget that's done. That's in theory, in theory. Now, to get there, you have to, A, be able to reach an agreement, and B, trust that Evers wouldn't change the agreement with his veto pen in the budget. So is that trust there right now? Maybe not. So there's that piece of the onion. The other piece is, what's this mean going forward for Evers? So talked about last week a little bit. He's talking tax cut. He signed a tax cut in 2021 and then ran in 2022. Does this mean he's going to run again in 2026? A lot of signs point to him being moving that way. I mean, I know you asked him at that event, you know, when you make a decision, after the budget. Let's look at that onion. Whether the budget goes until July, August, September, Democrats want the money machine to flow right now. They don't want to wait until like the fall. They want an answer from Evers because they also want to avoid a knockdown, drag out, ugly primary to replace him if he's not going to run. So if he's not going to do it, let's get an answer now, Governor, get this thing rolling. So there's that piece of the puzzle to figure out. So in assessing the governor's will he or won't he, it hasn't changed much in the last 9 months. If his health is okay, his wife's health's okay, some key aides want to keep going, the whole idea of having a Democratic majority in the legislature is very attractive, get some stuff done, that points to a yes. But he'd be 79 when the third term ended. That's, I don't know, I guess I'm better to do at 79, don't you?
Sure do.
And then you look at the Republican field that's kind of developing, and there are a lot of buts about them. There's not a clear, this person's the strongest one to take on Evers. So you've got headwinds out of Washington, D.C., a fractured field, a state Republican party that is trying to figure out what went wrong yet again in an election. And oh, by the way, it's at war with itself about conduct rules. So you can see a foundation for Evers to run and be in decent shape next year, unless, and this is the big caveat, age becomes an issue, his health becomes an issue, or there is a Dobbs-like event that galvanizes Republicans the way Dobbs did for Democrats. Remember, in 2022, it should have been a bad year for Democrats. I mean, that's just how it goes, midterm elections.
Historically. Mm-hmm.
But Dobbs overturning Roe v. Wade galvanizes Democratic base, boosted turnout from them, and that's helped Tony Evers and other Democrats in 22. Is there kind of an event out there for Republicans in 26? I don't know. It's a lifetime away. Like I said, there are multiple levels of this onion where we're going from here to next fall.
Right, and pushing the timeline back, if the budget is not passed on July 1, that, of course, will make Republicans a little uneasy because they want to know who they're going to be facing, especially if you are a Republican looking to either take on Evers or someone else. Let's move on to other news this week as the Assembly and Senate were both in session on the floor. In the Assembly, there was more resolutions than bills actually on the calendar, but the theme of the day, as often happens in the Assembly, was workforce and unemployment. We want to highlight just a few of them. AB 162 would require employers to report individuals who decline a job interview or a job offer. Another proposal would add some more requirements for work searches in order for that individual to remain eligible for unemployment benefits. And then, as I mentioned, a series of other bills you could see there on their screen that just tackle other unemployment issues and workforce matters. Meanwhile, in the Senate, we saw a rare bipartisan vote on a bill that has been really blocked by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss in the Assembly, which is SB 23, that would allow new mothers to remain on Medicaid for 12 months rather than the 60-day limit. We, of course, had Republicans and Democrats in the Senate speak on this matter, again, in a rare bipartisan vote. Let's just hear what they had to say about this bill specifically.
Think of not only the moms that we're helping out, think of the infants that we're helping out. By keeping those moms healthy and helping them take care of those infants, we prevent low birth weights. We prevent a healthier child. If we can do small things like this with a high return on investment to start to slow that down, it makes sense for this state. It makes sense for our taxpayers. And that's not even considering the morally and ethical reasons why we're doing this.
Wisconsin and Arkansas are the last two states to expand eligibility to 12 months. Why is Wisconsin fighting for last place when we have the opportunity to make the healthcare system work better for moms, babies, and families here in Wisconsin? This legislation would help us improve and save lives. This is a strong bipartisan bill that can do great things.
So let's start with that conversation when it comes to expanding coverage for new moms. Now, this is something that's been passed in almost every state. I believe about Wisconsin is one or two or three states, two states that doesn't have it. But every time this bill is introduced, every session, the big main opponent is Voss, and he argues it's an expansion of welfare.
Yeah, Mary Falskowski, Senate president and the main backer of this bill, said we'll get the assembly there someday. That summit will probably be after Robin Voss leaves the assembly because
right.
He is the main roadblock. By the way, what I didn't see on the agenda this week? Roper. So I know everybody loves that topic at home, but right of first refusal of the transmission bill. Remember, we had an alternative version introduced a couple weeks ago. We were told that a hearing in the coming days in assembly committee Voss said out of the assembly by the end of the month or the end of April, and there was no vote on that bill on the floor. We had all kinds of Roper opponents telling us on social media, they're going to ram it through, they're going to ram it through. They didn't do anything.
Yeah, I also heard there was a possibility of it just coming up on the floor.
That's
didn't happen.
That's not how it works.
Yeah, right?
Anyway, it tells you this thing is stuck and stuck badly at this point.
Let's move on also to some committee hearings this week as well. One that kind of made some headwinds was a bill on sextortion. A family from central Wisconsin near the Wausau area provided emotional testimony to lawmakers about a bill that seeks to hold cyber criminals accountable after the death of their 15-year-old son. Now, what this proposal would do, it would create a new crime for sextortion and enhance penalties. For those at home who does not know what sextortion is, this has really become the fastest growing cyber crime targeting children in North America. And what it would really do is it's typically individuals online, that tricks teens into sending an explicit photo of them. And then the criminal threatens to share that information publicly with friends and family members if they don't meet their demands. And in this case of Braden Bowen, a high school freshman from the Wausau area, he actually paid these individuals and then took his own life after falling victim to a sextortion scheme. We heard from his family. The Birds testified to lawmakers, which was some very emotional testimony. Let's just hear a little bit about their story.
The people who do this are trained to do so. There are YouTube channels since been taken down where these people are trained with scripts on how to, and their age group, you know, it's 14 through 17, but it happens to adults as well. They work in groups. It's their careers. It is their job to find our kids and extort them. My son paid them, and they would not stop. They tell these kids, you're gonna be a pedophile. Your life is over. You sent me a photo, your life is ruined. I'm gonna hurt your family. Braden had a little sister, her birthday was 3 days after we lost him. He would have never left her unless he felt that someone was going to get hurt or something really bad was going to happen.
So far this year, the Wisconsin Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force has received 103 tips just within the first 3 months of this year related to sextortion. Now, those don't include direct calls to local law enforcement, but this has been on state, national, federal law enforcement's radar for quite some time. And it's just very tricky, obviously, to catch these individuals because a lot of them are overseas. And it's really a new phenomenon that has really taken off over the past year, two, 3 years, according to law enforcement agencies. So this bill is definitely something that has broad bipartisan support. It was also helped crafted by the Attorney General's office. So it's likely to make its way through the legislature of what I hear. And we'll just keep tabs on where it goes from there. And hopefully it makes a difference for many young individuals here in our state. All right, let's move on to other things that happened in committee this week, which is, again, reiterating a topic that we brought up last week, which is related to a DEI audit, diversity, equity, and inclusion. This time, the issue was in front of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and Republicans who serve on that committee knocked the Department of Administration over that audit because it's when it comes to their audit, it found that many agencies did not comply with a majority of DEI-related actions that the agency said that they would do. Secretary Blumenthal from DOA insisted that the Evers administration is not hiring based on gender, arguing that their efforts outlined in a recent audit reflect the agency's efforts to retain and attract employees. Obviously, we know this conversation is happening at the federal level as well, and it's a kind of an opportunity to Republicans to use this as a sounding board as well.
Also going to be a peg for taking a chunk out of UW in the budget process. Don't mean to smirk there, but it's been a rough one for UW lately with Republicans. Remember back in 2023, Robin Voss and UW administrators struck this deal that the UW would freeze DEI positions, reassign a number of them. That would then exchange for release of state funding for things like employee raises. You're seeing this kind of theme pop up of you guys haven't done enough. Like, this hasn't gone far. You haven't addressed what we're supposed to do. This all sets up between this, concerns about building programs and everything else, declining enrollment, that Republicans are not going to do the $155 million that Evers wants to give the university in addition to the current pot of state aid, and they might take a chunk out of what they get right now in this budget process. So it's not sitting for a good budget for UW at this point.
All right, let's also move on to a DOA-related matter after the agency issued some guidance to state employees related to if they encounter federal immigration officials while at work. This prompted swift backlash from Republican lawmakers and the Republican Party of Wisconsin as a whole. They posted on X that issuing this guidance that Evers is, quote, joining a long list of liberal Democrats prioritizing illegal immigrants over Wisconsin citizens. Now, DOA has said the guidance was developed in response to agency staff who asked to how to respond to ICE officials in state buildings amid a surge, of course, of immigration enforcement actions happening by the Trump administration.
So to conservatives, this is trying to obstruct justice. To others, this is basically reiterating your rights under the Fourth Amendment, that this guidance is consistent with the Constitution. If you are approached by a federal agent, you don't have to answer any questions, right? Like, you can say, I want to speak to an attorney first. So this is another one of those kind of like social media driven stories in the conservative ecosphere trying to say, hey, Evers is out of touch. Immigration was a huge issue last fall. We want to try and get some dirt on his shoes about this one because we think he's not really kind of paying attention to what's happening to the public in general about immigration.
And as far as we know and looking into this, there hasn't been any federal workers going to state agencies, but they are at the Milwaukee County Courthouse. It was this morning that it was reported the FBI Director Akash Patel did post on X that agents did arrest a Milwaukee County judge on charges of obstructing immigration and enforcement. Now, this definitely has some backstory related to how she had what they blame as suspicion when it comes to an individual who is in her courtroom. And, you know, we'll see where this goes from here. But this also, I guess, you know, speaks volumes to the issue and how there are federal agents on the grounds here and carrying out what they long said from Trump on the campaign trail that they're going to be doing this.
And the Trump administration has said, we are going to charge you if you don't go along with what we want to do. Here's an actual example. I think the first one I can remember of a public official being actually charged mm-hmm. with something when these crackdowns.
All right, let's move on to the latest in the Wiz Dem chair race, of course, after Wickler is going to be stepping down, making a very interesting state convention in June for Democrats. This week, we learned that Brian Kennedy, who is the Glendale mayor, he is dropping out of the race. Of course, you can still see the other three men that are still in the race vying for the job.
Also worth noting that Sarah Godlewski, the Secretary of State, is going to run for first vice chair. Now, you have a lot of times these things, you have a slate of chair, first vice chair, second vice chair. None of the three running right now have a first vice chair candidate. So Godlewski is the only one in the race right now. Arvina Martin, who's a former Madison Alderwoman, she was going to run with Kennedy. She's also dropped out. So for Godlewski, kind of an open shot right now, this office. Her campaign told me it would not interfere with her running for another term in 2026 as Secretary of State, which is her plan right now. So just something to keep an eye on.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And this is an issue when it comes to rising election observer rules that has gone back and forth, back, I would say stretches almost over 2 years, right, Jared? And this is all related to how close individuals, when you are a volunteer at a polling place, how close you can stand to people voting.
So bigger picture, though, is the Elections Commission writes rules. Republicans almost always reject them.
And they ask for these rules, right? So, they want this guidance, and it's deadlocked.
So what happened was the Elections Commission has spent 2.5 years putting together rules about what happens at a polling place. So state law says if you are an observer, you can be no closer than 3 feet, no farther than 8 for what you can watch. What has happened, though, is you have lots of people who, especially from 2020 on, say, well, I can't see that. I think it's wrong. I can't see this. That's not right. Well, they don't know what the law says. You can't see everything. You're not allowed access to every single thing in a polling place. But there are things you are supposed to be able to see. These rules would clarify what you can do, when you can record things, for example. If you violate the rules, you can be removed and how that would work. One of the complaints Republicans was there's nothing in these rules that would punish bad actors, rogue election officials who don't allow observers what they're supposed to do. The problem is the commission can't do that. It has to be done through state statute. So this package wove its way through the legislature. An assembly committee heard public testimony in February and March. It voted 5-2 to recommend rejecting the rules. That then goes to the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules. Public hearing on Monday, Adam Nalin, co-chair, was like, I've got problems with this. You know, work with us enough. Then they voted yesterday, it was 5-5, which means the rules survive. The committee has overview of them until May 11th. After that, the Election Commission can put them into place. This is a minor miracle. Not that I'm rooting for anything to happen, but like seeing this happen is really unusual because it has become almost Republican orthodoxy that we cannot let the Election Commission do anything. We don't trust them. We should be the ones in charge of things. They are not people that we want dictating what's going to happen. The problem has been that Republicans will tell you that, look, the problems we're having right now are happening with the current system. So aren't these rules better than we have on the books right now? Shouldn't we want to see these things? There is, though, a very vocal, very small minority in their base that hates everything about WEC, just cannot stand it. And so they're the ones who show up at hearings and raise concerns, say, I'm being denied my rights at these polling places. They're violating this, this, and this. And here you have Kevin Peterson, Speaker pro tempore in the Assembly, who joined the four Democrats to vote against objecting to the rule. So now it's poised to go into effect. So you will have new standards, barring something changing in the next 3 weeks, you'll have new standards of polling places courtesy of the Elections Commission, which is almost unheard of.
And it also just speaks volumes, right? Just to see something rare like an individual speaker pro tempore going across the aisle to get this done, which is very rare that we see also with this committee as a whole as well. And it also just speaks volume to them actually getting something done, like you said, barring any changes to it, because there's not often that we see a lot of agreement. Looking at the commission itself too, how many times do we see them deadlock on issues 3-3 and it doesn't really matter, you know, there's not a tying vote to ultimately make a decision, which can make a lot of these changes that Republicans want to see more difficult. And they thought creating WEC would create this whole new system, right? I mean, they're the individuals behind the whole thing, and it's ultimately led to a lot of gridlock in the past few years. All right, let's get to Mix this week, looking at some new numbers when it comes to state revenues and some warning signs for March.
So my number is dork, full disclosure, but I look at the revenue numbers every month from the Department of Revenue. And there are a couple of things that were of note for the March numbers. Our two biggest pots of revenue in Wisconsin are income taxes and sales taxes. Income taxes were down 9% in March of 2025 compared to March of 2024. Okay, not great. Sales taxes down 2.2% from last month compared to the same month the year before. Okay, it's just March, just 1 month. But we have a big month coming up, April. That is a huge month for tax collections, and we will see kind of how the impact of, you know, income, all that kind of stuff. The report also had in it what's going on year to date. So, and we were chugging along pretty well in February. End of February, we were ahead 5.7% compared to the year before. So revenue's coming in 5.7% higher than the year before. That 1 month dropped us down to being 4.8% ahead. Now again, not the end all be all 1 month. But when Bob Lang says, the director of the Fiscal Bureau, we can't have another bad month of income and sales collections, that should tell you something. That this month coming up is key because Fiscal Bureau will do another report in mid-May of where we're at. They put a report together in January saying, we predict now finishing this fiscal year with $4.3 billion in a surplus, having $1.85 billion in new revenue growth for the next two-year period. We got money to spend. What if they come back in mid-May and say, well, on second thought, it's going to be X and Y instead? Here's the thing. Every mid-May in a budget cycle, Fiscal Bureau does this exercise. And for years, they've found more money. That's how they say getting capital. Well, they found more money for us. Usually, like, there's good news. 2 years ago was the first time in a dozen years Fiscal Bureau said, actually, things don't look as good as they were back in January. This is setting up to be another, well, actually, it might not be as good as it was back in January. Why is that important? Well, go through those numbers. $4.3 billion plus $1.85 seems like a lot of money. But Robin Voss says, I want $2 billion in tax cuts, right? He wants to spend $2 billion on prisons, right? Just to continue Medicaid, so the program that helps, you know, provides health care programs, just continue it as is $1.6 billion. So that 4.3 plus 1.85 minus 1.6 minus 4 is not a lot left over for education, for local aids, all these kinds of things. So yes, we have money, but not as much as we think we do, especially if revenues go south. And now the governor has proposed expanding Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act. That would generate a lot of extra money. Robin Voss will never do that. He is dug in, we're not doing that. So reality is things are tighter than they appear on the surface right now for the state. That report in mid-May from Bob is gonna, Fiscal is gonna be huge and will shape that budget going forward. And for a first topic, the tax discussion. Tony Evers is not going to cut taxes $2 billion and starve schools, right? That's his main priority. So that's going to shape that discussion. And everything else in the budget, well, the revenue numbers say in mid-May.
A lot to look for. All right. Falling this week is Senator Ron Johnson after he made some controversial statements related to 9/11, the September 11 tax.
It's not just saying something controversial. He wants to do a hearing about what he said. So back up 9/11, the Twin Towers fell. Also, Building 7 came down. There has been a conspiracy theory for years that Building 7, because it had some federal government offices, was taken down by explosion. It's all part of this inside job, 9/11. Ron Johnson goes on this sort of podcaster's show and says, I've got concerns. Something had to have happened there. I want to have a hearing on it. Now, one, Ron Johnson says a lot of stuff that people go, okay, I'm not sure about that. Okay, he is a contrarian. And with Ron Johnson, sometimes what he says turns out to be kind of accurate. For example, during COVID, he said natural immunity is going to be stronger than the vaccine. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, he was kind of right about that. Other stuff, not so much. This is kind of being brought up because while he says lots of stuff and people like to roll off their shoulders, the image of Ron Johnson having a public hearing, because he's a subcommittee chair of some subcommittee, having a hearing and a parade of conspiracy theorists coming in saying that the government took down Building 7, that is a nightmare for Republicans. They're like, what is going on? And you're seeing these voices and kind of like Republicans going, let's not do this. Let's please stop. But, you know, for Johnson, it hasn't hurt him so far. He does this stuff quite frequently. Is there ever a bridge too far with Ron Johnson where he says something that's just a little bit too much and people go, okay, you know what, I'm done. I don't know.
I mean, he just won re-election in 2022. Yep. It's not like he's on the ballot. You know, he's got still 4.5 years left of his term. So politically, it might not hurt him. But if it always comes back to haunt you, right, in politics, that is, of course, if he decides to run for another term. All right, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.